Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 8. Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Another week, different mood, different atmosphere. A lot of issues and questions to tackle. Before we get into everything, let me go ahead and plug the social media, the iTunes channel. You already know. So go subscribe to us on iTunes. Guys, please, please, please subscribe to us on iTunes. I say three times, please. I do it every week. And I just need everyone to go subscribe on iTunes. Really helps the show. You get the show directly to your iPhone the day it comes out, within the half hour it comes out. So you get it instantly to your phone. We'll also be posting the Audio Boom link on Twitter. So all you without iPhones on the Android or what have you, you guys can listen to it too. Go follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. The GIFs will be on Deckington for the Giants Monday night matchup against the Vikings. And as always, follow Weiss on Twitter at NYGDaily for daily stats, Giants insight, news, what have you. Let's get into the show. Weiss, how are you?
How's it going, Ethan?
Could be going better. I think that's fair enough to say.
Yes. It could be better, but obviously I'm going to stay positive a little bit. But it's, okay. It'll be tough.
That makes one of us. and listen, it feels honestly a little weird for me. I feel like I'm shaking off the rust a little bit because I'm known for being slightly more negative, especially after the past two Giants seasons, and then even coming into this season. And then they built me up. I became more and more positive, and then we get the letdown that was yesterday. So let's get into everything. We kind of wrote out a small topic list before the show started, and I think we'll be tackling everything that everyone has been talking about and the areas in which everyone has concerns. And if we don't, then we have your questions, and hopefully we'll tackle it there. So, let's open the show. First on the docket is Eli Manning. Now, I have a couple things to say about Eli Manning, and you do as well, and I think we agree and we disagree. Eli Manning did not have a good game on Sunday. That is not a controversial statement. As a Giants fan and as an Eli Manning lover, that is perfectly okay to say, perfectly okay to admit. Eli Manning had plenty of bad throws. However, at the end of the day, this loss is not solely on him, which I feel like some people in the media in particular are going after him and making him the scapegoat for the loss, when, quite frankly, he's been the standard for fourth quarter consistency and comebacks throughout the course of his career. No one has more fourth quarter comebacks, since he was drafted in 2004. Eli Manning's got the most. So, you know, obviously, and I swear to God, and I'm just going to sidetrack real quick right here. So apparently, and I wasn't watching the game on TV because I was there, apparently Joe Buck during the broadcast said, "There's no person I'd rather have in the fourth quarter than Eli Manning," something along those lines. I literally said the exact same things in the stands before Eli Manning threw that pick. So Joe and I both kind of mushed him there a little bit. But basically, what I'm trying to get at is that, yes, Eli Manning made some bad throws. Yes, Eli Manning did not go through all of his reads. But at the end of the day, this game was lost in plenty of other areas, not just at the quarterback position. Weiss, what are your thoughts?
I agree with you to a certain degree. And before I get into Eli Manning, I will say this. I get fairly negative, like you, when it comes to the Redskins, because I hate losing to the Redskins.
Yeah.
A lot of people dislike Dallas. A lot of people dislike the Eagles.
Well, it's worse for you because you're in the area.
Exactly. I hate it. It hurts me so much. And just to be driving in this area and seeing people having smiles on their face Monday morning kills me. But anyways, Eli Manning, quarterback. Before I get into it, I love Eli Manning. You love Eli Manning. And to me, it was a lot of the full blame I'm not putting on Eli Manning. You can't. That's not fair. That you'll just sound ridiculous if you say it's solely on Eli Manning. No. But here's the thing. See, to me, I always say this league is a quarterback-driven league. And regardless how talented you are, regardless how good of a defense or how great of a coaching staff you have, to me, it's a quarterback-driven league. And I just thought that Eli Manning in this game and in games and the previous two games, I saw the same mistakes, and those mistakes were staring down receivers, missing open receivers, not going through his reads. And throughout the game, I kept seeing it, and you know, the big play that everyone is talking about was the missed touchdown to Beckham where he got Shepherd. And, you know, to me, that wasn't the big one. I mean, obviously he missed the seven, but there was other ones where I just didn't understand why he didn't. I mean, it's not like he didn't have a clean pocket. We can't blame the offensive line on these certain plays. He just missed open throws. And I feel like I hold him to a high standard, and I just felt like he made mistakes that he shouldn't have made. This was not a defense that, you know, disguised him or made him confused or was just so great. They lost starters, and it just seemed like he, along with, you know, the coaching and the play calling, we'll get into that, didn't take advantage of it. And on the other end, when the Giants players went down in the secondary, Kirk Cousins and Jay Gruden, who a week ago you and I were talking about possibly not being with the team by the end of the season, did. And it's just frustrating when I saw it, because it just seemed like you expect better from your quarterback. And obviously there's other reasons why they lost, but because I hold Eli to such a high standard, the mistakes he made in this game were not Eli Manning-like. I expect better from him. So for me, I think you might put the blame more on other things, but for me, I tend to put the blame a little bit more on Eli just because he's the quarterback and how much I value him on this team.
I mean, all right, I'm going to jump in here and touch on a few things you said. The last thing which you said was it wasn't a very Eli Manning game. I mean, listen, those mistakes were the epitome of the mistakes that Eli's made his entire career. Just boneheaded, picks.
I'm not talking about the picks. I'm talking about not going through his reads.
Okay,
I mean,
fine. Okay.
Yeah, you know, when Eli's had the weapons, we've seen what he's been able to do, right? But when he has the weapons now, and it just seemed like he wasn't going through his reads. And I can't, you know, if this was the offensive line's issue and the offensive line didn't give him time, I'll be up here with you when we're talking about the offensive line. But I can't blame them. It would be unfair to them. To me, it just seemed like he wasn't going through his reads. And the interceptions, I understand. But some of the decision-making was just stuff that I thought I wouldn't see anymore. And a lot of it was on him, and I can't put the blame on anyone else in the offense. Now, if you want to look to play calling, we can discuss that. But what I'm talking about, it's not on Eli Manning. Like, it's not necessarily interceptions. It's more so not going through his reads, locking down on a receiver. I thought that, you know, these are not mistakes that Eli Manning usually has made.
So the order in which I provided you with the topics for today doesn't already seems to be getting messed up. Let's skip the penalties because we've both referenced play calling numerous times already, and I put a large amount of the blame on the play calling. There were plenty of things I was not pleased about, and that is putting it kindly. Let me start with this. People are mad. Eli's not going through his reads. He's not going through his progressions. A lot of these designed plays are dinks and dunks underneath to the tight end, underneath to the running back, who is Shane Vereen, underneath to Bobby Rainey, who actually broke a decently long-sized screen pass. The fact that he's not getting to these receivers downfield is, if he's looking to these guys who are supposed to be his first reads on the play, and he thinks Shane Vereen is open or Will Ty is open, and plenty of times they weren't, and Eli just made a bad throw, you know, sure, he should be going through these full progressions, but if the first option in that play call is open, he's going to go there underneath. There were plenty of instances going to Will Ty in the red zone. That made no sense to me. And I think that was an unbelievable interception made by the defensive back on that play. And I think if Will Ty even gives an iota of effort, that ball doesn't be intercepted. Even if he's not going to catch the ball, as long as he's trying to break up the play, that isn't caught for an interception. I know you want to try to spin zone this, and I'm going to let you jump in right after. The Bobby Rainey fade makes no fucking sense. That play pissed me off more than any other play that was run. You take the best pass-catching running back in the NFL. Let's say it's David Johnson on the Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson is 6'1". Bruce Arians is not running a fade to David Johnson at any point in that game. That play is too cute. It made no sense that it was drawn up. Regardless if it was Rainey, if it was Vereen, you do not throw a fade to your running back, let alone one that's 5'8". That makes no sense. You have a three-headed monster at wide receiver. Granted, none of them are exceptionally tall, but we both agree that both have incredible verticals, have been burning their defensive backs all game. Worst case, you can go to Larry Donnell, who's 6'6", which also makes no sense for the tie play that was intercepted because Larry Donnell wasn't even on the field for that. And if you have a tight end in the red zone, why not make it the bigger target? So I have a huge problem with the play calling and the personnel decisions, especially in the red zone. I'm going to let you go now.
So I'm going to try to tackle this in separate occasions. So the Will Tye play. Do you think that was a design play to go to Will Tye, or was that Eli Manning not going through his progression?
Couldn't tell you.
So we don't know. We don't know that. I couldn't tell you either. So we're gonna leave that there.
Well, I was talking about going underneath to the tight end and the running back. I'm talking about generally throughout the course of the game. Because as the numbers show, going to the big three wide receivers was way more efficient than just dinking and dunking, which is a product of Ben McAdoo's West Coast offense.
Right. I was gonna say. So we understand that we don't know if it was a play design or if it was Eli Manning not going through his progression. I give you the Bobby Rainey one. The Bobby Rainey one was a play call that you didn't like, but I actually liked the play call because I thought that Bobby Rainey had a step. It kind of looked like it was an out route to Rainey, and the if you go back and look at the play, the defensive back bit a little bit. Rainey went out. Eli also rolled that way too, so you saw that was a play design. Eli just threw a bad ball. I thought he should have threw it, you know, a little bit more out into the back of the end zone. I thought Rainey also didn't do a good job coming down with it, but obviously I can't expect a 5'8 running back to go up and get it. I just didn't like that. I liked the play design. I didn't like it in that time. That's a play you call on first and goal or second and or goal.
And to a different player.
You call. You could do it to a different player, but I thought that, I mean, Rainey had a step.
Doesn't matter. That's, you know, it's a circumstantial thing. I could name five players on that roster I'd rather have going up for a fade route in the end zone during any point in the game than Bobby Rainey.
Right. I understand, but I'm saying is, could you get him to bite the way the Redskins did if it was Vereen? You think it with Vereen they can bite like that?
Absolutely. Vereen's way more versatile faking into the slot and going outside than Rainey is.
Exactly. He's known to be a pass-catching running back. So, like I said, would it trick him?
So you're going to try to catch a defensive back off guard by throwing to a 5'8"? It just makes no sense.
Line
up Beckham on that side, and if they double cover him, then you can throw to Shepard or Cruz in the slot. I would be even more fine running a shotgun draw, and I hate the shotgun draw in that situation than throwing a fade to Rainey.
I'm with you though. I didn't like the play call at that time. I think on third and goal, you got to go to your money guys. You don't throw that screen. I don't even think they ran that play before. So to run it on third and goal is a big risk. But at the same time, you know, it was a badly thrown ball. Now, it goes both ways here. If Eli throws a better ball, I think that's a touchdown. If they call a better play, maybe they get a touchdown out of that. So, you know, there's ways you can look at that play. But you go back to the dink and dunk stuff, to the tight end, to the running back. You know, I go back to it and I say, okay, if it's a play design, then fine. It's a terrible play call. But I don't think the play call throughout so many times was, we're going to Vereen. I don't think they brought in the. They, I don't think they sat there and said, you know what? Forget about the big three. We're just going to focus in on the tight end, on the running back, on Donnell. I don't think that was the case. I think it's
more than you think, because that it's just the way that McAdoo's run the offense. And if you look back to last year when he was offensive coordinator, the only reason that Beckham had the year that he did is because who else are they going to throw to deep? They didn't have Shepard. They didn't have Cruz. I honestly think that Beckham was a product. Well, not a product. Let me rephrase that. Beckham benefited more from the lack of playmakers at McAdoo's disposal last year. Okay, that sounds like an obvious statement to say, but I think it's very evident right now. But even more evident, the fact that it's not just him not going to Beckham. you know, where he's not even going to Cruz. He's not going to Danelle deep. He's not going to Shepard deep as much, despite the fact that Shepard's had two good games. It works. When they go to those wide receivers, it works. And McAdoo's offense and his philosophy and his style just doesn't cater to the three wide receivers that he has, and he needs to change it up a bit, in my opinion.
It could be that. I don't want to say you're completely wrong, but I, for me, it's just tough to believe that a coach facing a team that's already has a bad secondary, is down two starters, is sitting there telling his quarterback, just go to your first progression. Don't worry about X, Y, and Z. Don't worry about this situation or that situation. You go to your first read. I mean, you know, you look at the play, and if you watch the play, I watched so many of the, for the past 24 hours, I watched so many plays from that game. And it just seemed like, drop back, I'm locked in on this guy. Drop back, I'm locked in on this guy. I'm not even going to look. Everyone has this, that play of Beckham running with his hand up in the air and the whole stadium yelling his name. That to me, that was, that's not even the worst of it. The worst of it is, it was constant, I'm going to drop back, I'm not going to look. Hey, I'm not going to look at my receivers. I'm just going to my first read. And I just find that hard to believe that the coaching staff sat there or in Eli's ears, telling McAdoo or Sullivan, whoever it was, is telling Eli, just throw to your first progression. Just throw to your first progression. Even if the offense is set up that way, I don't think that in that situation that was the case. Now, the play calling was an issue, and I think me and you both agree on it to an extent. But to me, Eli constantly, it was a constant thing where he was just, again, he was just not going through his reads. Not even his second read. It was, okay, Vereen, all right, Will Tye, all right, Danelle, okay, here's Cruz, okay, here's Shepard. And that's a problem. And on that drive and the interception, to me, it didn't look like a play that was set up for Danelle. I just think that Eli just, that was his first read, and he just saw him, and he Danelle just threw it. I'm sorry, Will Tye. The okay. wheel route to Rainey. There was another wheel route to Rainey too. I don't know. I can't remember if that was before or after the one in the end zone. But there was a wheel route to Rainey where a flag was called on Josh Norman for a holding. You see, Larry Donnell, the same way he scored in Week One, 6'6", running down the field, and he's looking at Eli, and Eli already has his mind made up, and he's throwing it to Rainey. So. Look, there's different ways you can look at it, but for me, I'm pointing a little bit more toward the quarterback than the play calling, although there's blame to go everywhere.
Sure. And something I didn't bring up earlier, mostly regarding Eli not going through his progressions, I don't think listen, you can say that Flowers and Hart had decent games, and they did. That's not the point. For me, I still don't think he fully trusts them. And you can't really blame them because, to be quite honest, they had miserable seasons last year. We both agree that they still didn't play well throughout the course of the preseason. And it's not like they were lights out during, you know, Weeks 1 and Week 2. This was probably the toughest pass rush that they faced. And I will give them credit. They did a good job. And Eli needs to learn to trust them. However, right. I think Eli, and this is a terrible thing to say, I think Eli goes back this week. He watches the tape from the Redskins game, says, hey, Bobby Hart and Ereck Flowers actually did a decent job in pass protection. Now he's going into prime time against the best defense in the league, tries to trust them, and ends up getting murdered. So it's going to be like two steps forward, one step back.
And you brought up a good point with the offensive line. I think the one play also that it could have rattled Eli. Now look, Eli
well, he doesn't got get murdered by Baker.
When that, I thought, I honestly, when I saw that hit, I was like, okay, is he concussed? Because it just seemed like he took a helmet right to the... To the face and to the chest, and I was like, okay, is this guy out? He hopped back up, but I think that might have riled him a little bit too. But what can you do?
Nothing. All right, we've tackled Eli, we've tackled play calling, we've tackled personnel. Let's talk penalties. Over 100 yards worth of penalties. An indictment on the discipline and the coaching. As I said last year under Coughlin, who was touted as this disciplinarian, he was putting players in the doghouse for no reason or hardly any reason. And that was my main critique of Tom Coughlin, is that he was touted as a disciplinarian, yet the team would constantly just make boneheaded plays, take dumb penalties, poor clock management. And on Sunday, under Ben McAdoo, We saw over 100 yards worth of penalties. We saw Weston Richburg, Andrew Adams, Eric Flowers, I believe he had a face mask. You know, we had plays that would just set the Giants back. And for McAdoo to not have his team prepared, to not only going into a divisional game at home, but in a game in which everyone knew how contentious it would be between Odell and Josh Norman. Lack of preparation, in my opinion. So I'm throwing some criticism his way. And plenty of those plays, I'll point out mostly the Andrew Adams personal foul, probably cost the Giants the game.
Yeah, that...
Can I just ask you a question real quick?
Yes, go.
This is a rules question, okay? Because yes. I was at the stadium, and this made no sense to me.
I think me and you probably have the same question, but I'll let you ask it. Go ahead.
Okay, so Andrew Adams took the penalty after the play had occurred, correct?
Right.
If those are offsetting penalties, why wouldn't the Redskins player knock it out of bounds, Giants get the ball, Andrew Adams commits the penalty, why wouldn't they just push the Giants back after the Giants had recovered the ball?
I think because... Now,
I'm sure it's in the rulebook. That just makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense to me, too, because both penalties happened after the play was blocked.
Exactly.
The kick was blocked. And I had that same question. I actually asked the person I was watching the game with, I'm like, shouldn't they get the ball there than 15 yards back? But I guess with the offsetting rule, with both sides committing penalties, it offsets it. I don't know.
If it's two personal fouls, I feel like the Giants should have gotten the ball exactly where it went out of bounds.
I'm 100% with you.
I feel like not enough people are questioning that.
Yeah, could it be that maybe they don't consider the play completely over until the whistle blows? But then, what about an interception?
Right.
You know. So I don't know. Do they consider it still technically Redskins ball until a Giants player touches it because it's a punt? Could that be the case?
I mean, listen. If you're a team and you punt the ball, someone on the other team receives it, but there's a personal foul. Let's say like someone targets someone, you know, headshot.
Right.
You don't redo the kick. It just gets tacked on to the end of the run.
Yeah, I had that same question. I was actually thinking about that. I went back and watched the play, and it was to make sure that it was both penalties happened after the block, and it was. I didn't understand. I think I gotta.
Right. All right. So if there's any listeners out there, Mike Pereira, I'm looking at you sitting back in your chair with your Tito's because I know you're listening to this podcast. But if there's any listeners out there that know the rule book, or know the exact rule of the infraction, or you want to screenshot it and send it to us, tweet it at us because we're both very curious. All right, Weiss, I interrupted you before. I believe we were talking about the penalties. Yes, we were. I will let you continue.
Yeah, 100%. The penalties are on the coaching staff. And look, the Redskins committed 8 penalties and got 70 yards. The Giants committed 11 for 128. The big thing was for the Giants is the penalties that they had were in the worst spots.
Absolutely.
Olivier Vernon roughing the passer. You talked about the block punt. Weston Richburg gets a – although I don't – that's very ticky-tack to me. I don't know if that's a penalty. But anyways, that moves the ball back. You know, when it could have been first and goal from the inside the 5, it gets pushed back. Multiple times you had a holding penalties that pushed the ball back. That's on coaching. I mean, you gotta be more disciplined. And I think McAdoo took blame for that.
He did, to his credit.
Yeah, he did take blame for it. He says he has to do a better job. So I'm with you, man. I got nothing on that. That's on coaching.
Absolutely cool. Anything else there, or do you want to move on? Because next in the list, I had just a list of all three coaches, but I feel like we touched on McAdoo and Sullivan, and I do want to talk about Spagnuolo and his defensive philosophy.
Let's do it. Go for it.
It appears to me that the Giants are employing a bend but don't break defense, meaning they are allowing plays to go underneath and they're going to bend, and eventually either hold the other team to a field goal or, and this is a big or, cause a turnover, whether that's a fumble, an interception, strip sack, whatever. Okay? They did that week 1 against Dak Prescott. Don't let him beat you with your legs. don't give up the big play to Witten or Ezekiel Elliott. We saw it happen against the Saints where they contained the run. They basically controlled Brandon Cooks and forced Drew Brees to go underneath. They did the same thing against the Redskins. And I will say this right now. I have no problem with the bend but don't break philosophy. But it only works if you're causing turnovers, which the Giants' defense has not done well. I think their turnover differential is like a minus six. And listen, that's a lot of, you know, we can give shit to the offense, especially Shane Vereen for his fumbles. However, it doesn't work unless you're either getting to the quarterback on big third downs, setting them back, causing turnovers, and the Giants are doing none of those. I think Spags needs to get more aggressive. It was especially concerning to me that he didn't get more aggressive when the Redskins were down a second starting offensive lineman. I know on the final drive they moved to a jumbo package with an extra offensive lineman to run the ball more effectively, but I'm talking about throughout the course of the game, because while JPP and Vernon did a great job and have done a great job of stopping the run, and I feel like it's a seriously underrated aspect of their game that no one talks about, there needs to be the pass rushing aspect, which I don't think I'm seeing enough of.
Yeah, I mean, they had two sacks. Definitely need more of that. I think the aggressive part of it, I'm not going to sit here and make an excuse for Spagnuolo. I'm with you 100%. I think they were not as aggressive as they should be. And they're really, 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 this is a concerning thing for me. They're really starting to wear down their front four.
Absolutely. We saw Snacks Harrison left with dehydration.
They're on the field for too long. You know, JPP has that shoulder thing. Vernon with the wrist. I mean, we're only into week four, and the defensive line is our money maker right now. And I want to share something with you guys. Back in 2008, and this I'm gonna my good friend Larry on Twitter who brought this up and brought it to my attention.
Larry Soprano.
There you go.
Shout out to Larry Soprano.
He brought up and it made me think, and I even looked it up. In 2008. When the Giants were up rolling and they were 11-12-1 team. Yes, what killed them was Plexico Burress, but also the wearing down of that defensive line hurt them a lot, especially late in the season. Remember Big Fred Robbins?
Yep.
He had that tightness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tuck, who kind of broke out that year when OC went down, he had some nicks and nacks. You know, he had a stinger, I think I remember correctly. So, they have to start getting pressure from different areas, and guys on the bench, Owa, Romeo Okwara, they got to come in. They
got to make
plays. Kerry Wynn, Jay Bromley, they got to start making some plays because, look, it'll be devastating if we lose one of those four guys. Now, could they survive a week or two if, you know, Hankins or Snacks missed a game, maybe they can do that. But, you know, if you start wearing these guys out when you need them late in the year, I mean, they're not going to be as effective as they are now. In terms of the turnovers, look, they have the bend but don't break. But I don't want to make an excuse, and I said that. But the one thing I will say is Washington had good field position a lot in this game.
They only punted twice.
Yeah, and but when the Giants punted to him, you know, where were they starting? Midfield in Giants territory. Remember that one punt return? Jamison Crowder took it all the way inside the 30.
That was an amazing return, by the way. I just want to point that out.
It was. It was also poor tackling on the Giants, by the way.
That's true, too.
Remember, they stopped them one time, but then the fake punt. You want to put that on the defense, or is that special teams? To me, that's special teams, even though it was a defensive player.
It was Trevin Wade. Was coming.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, Trevin Wade.
To me, that sounds special. So there was a lot of times where, you know, the fake punt, field position. So they do have to play better, and I think they do have to start generating some more pressure and actually getting some turnovers. Hopefully they can do that against Minnesota, who we'll talk about a little later.
So they went into week three with, and correct me if I'm wrong, with two sacks on defense, none of which were from the defensive line, correct?
Right.
It was Leon Hall and Landon Collins.
I believe so, yes.
So, they, you know, I know JPP and Vernon had each had a sack against the Redskins, but I think there's your answer. When I say Spags needs to get creative with the blitzing, who has played better in the box than Landon Collins? Why not send him on a couple blitzes? And the opportunity for that was early in the game when you were up 21-9, when Kirk Cousins was clearly rattled playing away at MetLife Stadium with basically their season on the line. And then you let him back in by not getting creative. And then you lose DRC and you lose Eli Apple. And the Redskins start spreading it out with four wide receivers, five receivers, four wide receivers and a running back out of the backfield. And then all of a sudden, you can't afford to blitz your defensive backs. Your defensive line is banged up because you've been running them ragged all game. And then the Redskins take advantage. So, you know, they need to get more aggressive. The time to do it was earlier in the game. I think that's all I got to say about it if you want to move on.
Yeah, let's move on. You pretty much got it on that one.
All right. I'll let you start this one. Is there anything you want to say about, and we kind of talked about this earlier, but I have it written down, targeting the three wide receivers versus targeting the tight ends or the running backs?
I mean, there's a couple tweets I put out. You guys can go back and read them. They need to get the ball more to the receivers. If it's play calling, if it's the quarterback, you have to feed your money guys. Those are your money guys. There's no reason why Will Ty and Shane Vereen have the same number of targets as Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz. Just look at the stats when you throw to your big three versus when you don't throw to your big three. There's a big talent drop-off between those three receivers and everyone else.
Can I read the stat out because I have the number in front of me?
Go ahead. You have it. I was looking for it, but you have it.
Go ahead. I got it. It was in my blog today, shameless plug. On those 21 targets, the trio of wide receivers gained 264 yards, which is 12.6 yards per target. He also gave 17 targets to his tight ends and running backs, two of which resulted in interceptions, including one that ended the game that amassed to 86 yards, which is 5.1 yards per target.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's written on the wall. I think they will.
They need to.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, it's not really hard to figure that one out. I think they will.
There's even more to that stat, if I may. Eli, in the fourth quarter, Eli was 2 for 6 for 22 yards and 2 interceptions when he was not targeting Odell, Shepard, or Cruz. I believe Shepard is also the youngest player or fastest player, someone his age, to 200 yards, 2 touchdowns, and under 20 receptions, which is crazy, which means he needs the ball more. And I understand, and this is a good transition, not to pat myself on the back because we need to talk about Odell. I understand why Odell's frustrated. I don't think he would be frustrated if he was receiving the same number of targets if Eli was going to Shepard or Cruz instead, because he has that opportunity and he has to use Odell in those situations where he knows he's going to be drawing double coverage most of the time to let Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz eat. Let's talk about Odell Beckham Jr. because our boy Ben McAdoo not doing him any favors, in my opinion. I'll let you start.
I'll let you start.
You want me to start? All right.
Go first.
This might get a little passionate.
All right, let's go. I'll let you go.
Odell Beckham is an emotional player. We know this. We've watched it. He's been a Giant for a couple of years now. We know he has some trouble at controlling it. Ben McAdoo came out yesterday and said that Odell's emotions could have been a distraction to the team. Odell Beckham put up 121 yards and 7 receptions. Odell Beckham was not going through his reads. Odell Beckham was not throwing interceptions. Odell Beckham was not turning the ball over. Odell Beckham was not taking stupid penalties that cost the team the game. His outburst on the sideline happened after Weston Richburg had gotten ejected from the game. Justin Pugh also came out today during an interview and said that Odell Beckham's emotions did not affect the team negatively. So why is Ben McAdoo taking the most polarizing wide receiver in the NFL, who is already unfairly targeted by the media, and making his life harder than it needs to be? Every single article today, every single blog, everyone on the media and on Twitter talking about how immature Odell Beckham is, how he needs to grow up. And to be quite honest, it was unfair of Ben McAdoo to publicly air him out specifically for his behavior when, yes, he can work on it and he shouldn't be crying during a game, but it did not affect the team in any way in a negative fashion. He is the most passionate guy on the team. He is their best player, bar none. And I don't think it was right that Ben McAdoo aired him out. End rant.
A lot of the stuff, I agree with you. I think the quote, I will read the quote because I think you read the headline. I'll let that one slide. McAdoo says Beckham needs to control his emotions better and become less of a distraction to himself and to his teammates. It's our job to help him with the process and maturing. Odell Beckham, now it's my turn. I've thought about this for a lot since Sunday, and I've read everyone said, and I've here are my thoughts. I love Odell Beckham. I think when he's on his game, he's the best receiver in pro football. I say it to everyone, and I stand by that statement. When he's on, he's better than Antonio Brown. He's better than DeAndre Hopkins. He's better than Julio Jones. The thing about Odell Beckham is, it has become clear to me that if you want to stop Odell Beckham, you get inside his mind. However way you do it, whether it's ethical or non-ethical, whether you attack him in certain areas or in different areas, you go after his manhood or whatever the case may be, you can get in his head and you can get him off his game. Now, take away the sideline antics. Last week, Odell Beckham laid another cheap shot on Kenny Vaccaro. Now, I didn't think it was as bad as what it was made out to be. And I don't think a lot of his... I think he's fairly untreated in the media. But the thing is because of what happened in Carolina, and I think you and I both agree that when Beckham launched himself at Josh Norman, he took it to the next level, and that's why he was suspended, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So you have that. Rewind further back. You have multiple incidents involved where he's smacking guys' helmets. He's, you know, involved. It was an incident in Buffalo. Now, we know Buffalo. We know that team. We know the coach. We know the reputation. There was an incident in New England. There was an incident in the preseason with Jacksonville. And now, more recently, now you have the incident in New Orleans where kind of a report came out. Well, what's, you know, the Saints calling Odell Beckham certain things. Now, Sunday before the game, which I thought was a little ironic, you see that video that comes out with Beckham taking that shot at Vaccaro, fined $36,000. Odell Beckham is one personal foul and sportsmanlike conduct penalty away from hurting his team. So we understand that, right? Because yeah. if he gets another sportsmanlike conduct, he's suspended the game. So he's hurting his team right there, right?
Yeah.
So the sideline situation. The narrative last year was that the Giants cannot control Odell Beckham. It was what everyone said. Nobody went to him when what was going on against Carolina. Nobody went up to him. Nobody tried to calm him down. No, there was nothing like that.
I think on the other side, I would like to step in there and rephrase that. That's a team leadership issue. That's not this kid's out of control, we can't control him. That team had zero leadership on it.
100%. But the narrative was yes, leadership, but it was also the coach not going to Beckham and calming him down. Remember, there was a lot of talk about Coughlin. People said that game
exactly what I'm was kind of like
the final, yeah. was the final nail in the coffin, and that's why Coughlin was gone. I think there's more to it than that. But anyways, Ben McAdoo, when he makes that comment, I think is telling the world that, look, I have control of this kid. I can control him, and I want everyone to know that. He's also telling everyone, look, this is his third year in the league, and, you know, he's not a rookie anymore, and we need him, and we understand that he's the future of this franchise. You said he's the best player on this team. He is the face of the franchise. He is the guy that's going to be here for the long haul. Eli Manning is a two-time Super Bowl champion. We know that. You know that. I know that. But he's in the latter part of his career. It's where the expectation is that it's McAdoo and it's going to be Odell Beckham for the long haul for the next decade. Whoever the next franchise quarterback is, we know we hope one thing is guaranteed, and that'll be Beckham and McAdoo together. And I think the comment was not for – I think it's taken a little bit out of context, and I think that he could have phrased it a little bit better. But if you read it, you can if you read it and kind of think about it, you understand, look, I understand he's an emotional guy, and I understand that, you know, I don't mind the crying, actually. I think that that's who he is. People get emotional. They like to tear up. Look, this is a passionate game that they play. But you have to understand, there's no good. Now, he did no harm to the team, but there's no good in that silent antics. Here's where the distraction comes in. The distraction is, now your teammates got to talk about it. Now your teammates got to answer questions about it. Now your coach has to answer questions about it. Now they're asking the quarterback, hey, why was your receiver frustrated on the sideline? Was he mad that you're not getting him the ball? Stuff like that, you know, starts getting up. People start talking, and then obviously the team loses, and there's more talk about that because I always say losing makes it worse. So to recap, I think the purpose of McAdoo's comments was not to call out his receiver, but to tell everyone, look, I have control of this guy. I understand. I know that there's still areas where he has to grow. We have to help him on it as an organization. I think he has improved. Look, if you look at this game, when you talk about who got, if you look at Josh Norman was penalized twice, Beckham was penalized once. They were both fairly cooperative throughout the game. But just because you don't hurt the team in some way, that doesn't mean that what you do on the sideline is okay. And whether McAdoo was right or not, I think what he meant to say was, look, this guy, we understand the issues at hand. We also want you to know that we have control of it, and we know that it's an organizational thing that we have to help him continue to mature and be that leader and that face of the franchise that we want him to be. End quote.
That was a long quote.
And rant. I don't know if it was a rant.
Okay, yeah. I don't disagree with a lot of the stuff you said. At the end of the day, all Ben McAdoo has to say is we're dealing with it internally and not help create all of these headlines and all of these narratives. You've seen them. You've seen them all over Twitter, social media, ESPN, that Odell Beckham is the distraction when Sunday, he was far from the distraction on the field. Bad reads, bad throws, bad penalties, plenty of other issues that they need to work on. I understand that Ben McAdoo probably didn't intend to single out Odell Beckham and make him the focal point of the media, and you do bring up a good point in regards to the fact that, you know, one more personal foul, then he's in big trouble because then he is a distraction to the team. I just think
it'll be more than a distraction. It'll be hurting the team.
Right, exactly. You deal with it internally.
Can I say one more thing? Look, yes. I got a lot of questions about this. Is an outrageous question. I'm so thankful we didn't get this question. I got a lot of people asking me, is Ben McAdoo's comments going to impact Odell Beckham not wanting to re-sign with the Giants?
I saw that. I saw that a lot, actually.
And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? Like, what? First of all, in the NFL, now, it's a good thing for the team. It's a bad thing for the players. But there's something called a franchise tag, and there's something called player options, and you can use the franchise tag multiple times. And rarely do you see a player of that magnitude leave via free agency. Can you tell me the last time a player that I'm not going to say he's that was on the level of Beckham, because I don't think Beckham is fully there yet, but was that big of a superstar that left his team via free agency? Last person I can think of is Reggie White, when he left Philly and went to the Packers. Yeah. Is there anyone in between there?
I'm thinking.
I mean, T.O., but T.O.'s situation was different. There was a rift inside the organization. And
Ocho Cinco.
Chad, but that was more of Chad's end of the line. And
sure. Okay, no, you're bringing up a good point.
You know, in their prime. I'm talking about in their prime.
No, I know.
Top of their game, and they no, it's not. Just relax. I mean, just relax, everyone. It's not a big deal. There's nothing that's going to happen that's going to impact Odell Beckham's decision in free agency. Give me a break.
Jeez. Agreed. All right, let's move on just because I think we're we're already at 45 minutes. We haven't even gotten to the Vikings in questions. So let's do a really quick look ahead to the Vikings. What are your thoughts going into the game? Historically, the Giants have not played well on Monday night. I believe their all-time record is like 25-37. Doesn't help that they may have some key injuries and they're going up against the league's best defense. I'll let you give your thoughts first.
And it doesn't help that they historically, their quarterback hasn't played well against the Vikings, if you look at his numbers. Look, you know what the Vikings are. They got, you say the best defense in the NFL. I say second best behind Denver, but same concept. They have a great defense. Sure. I think the Giants have enough talent to compete with the Vikings. I think the big test for them is going to be how do they move the ball against the Vikings. I think the defense will do a good job against Sam Bradford, and I think that they'll be able to keep them from kind of moving the ball at will and pulling up points. You talk the injuries. Obviously, we don't know about DRC and Eli Apple. My hope, and I'm crossing my fingers, my hope is at least one of them can go.
Yeah,
if one of them can go, that we're I'll be feeling much better. Both can go, that'd be great. But if at least one of them can go, that'd be great. That'd be okay for me. They have to clean up the penalties. They have to. I gotta get better production from the quarterback. I need McAdoo to be better preparing his team, and they have to play to their potential because it's going to be a tough, tough place. But the talent is there. They have the firepower on offense. This isn't the 2015 Giants going into Minnesota without their best player. They have the talent around them. It'll be a big test for their offensive line. We'll learn a lot about their offensive line this week, although I did say a big test was them last week, and they did good. But this is going to be a big test for them, and 3-1 sounds a lot better than 2-2. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So I agree with your point. One of Apple or DRC needs to be ready to play. I think Jenkins can shut down Diggs, but we need... Yes.
Hello.
But they need someone else to be healthy to help cover the other side. The Vikings defense, it's more than just keeping Eli upright, although I know they just had 8 goddamn sacks against the Panthers. They are, the Vikings defensive line is also incredible against the run. Now, on the other side of the ball, Vikings offense is only averaging like 2.3 yards per carry or something ridiculous like that. So I have no concern about them shutting down the run. And when you shut down the run, you force Sam Bradford to have to make plays. Sam Bradford, Sammy Sleeves, not the best at making plays. So I really, it's going to be a low-scoring game in my opinion. I'm not that concerned about Sam Bradford beating the Giants. The Giants cannot beat themselves. And if there's any game for Eli and McAdoo to get their shit together and target the wide receiver trio, the three-headed monster, CBS, as I saw them being called on Twitter today, Cruz, Beckham, Shepard, which I like a lot, by the way, then I think that if they can pick on Trey Wayans and that they'll be able to win. Because they're not going to be able to run the ball that effectively with, you know, Darquois on that offensive line against that defensive line. They just aren't. I said best defense in the league. You said second best defense in the league. End of the day, they're an incredible defense. So this is the time to unleash the three-headed monster. It's going to be a low-scoring game. I really am confident the Giants pull it out.
Yeah, I refuse to believe that this season is going to be like the previous.
Especially after season. Weeks 1 and 2.
Yeah, I think every time they pull me out, every time I try to pull myself, out, they just suck me back in.
Love hate.
I just look at the talent and I say they need this game, and like the Vikings got to lose one game, right? They're not going to be undefeated. Yeah, and I know it's only 3 weeks, but
I mean, this is a team that's got starting Sam Bradford and lost Adrian Peterson.
For and then, you know what? You know another thing about them is they already lost their left tackle for the year. I think they're having issues at center too. Although I think they found their center, but they're also going to be without another important offensive lineman, and that's Boone. I don't know what his first name is. He used to play for the Niners. Alex Boone. They're going to be without Alex Boone.
Yep.
Who's their starting? I think he plays guard, but they're going to be without him too. So that's also another banged up offensive line can we see that defense start to generate some pass rush and get to Bradford and rattle him? Because he's not, I mean, I know Kirk Cousins isn't a great quarterback, but Sam Bradford isn't a great quarterback either. So if they can get pressure, like, you got to like their chances. But can they move the football? That's going to be the big thing offensively. Can they protect Eli and get to the, you call it what, CBS?
Yeah, CBS.
To me, it's pretty simple. I call them just throw to them. Throw to them. That's it. So, we'll see.
Throw to them, triple T.
There you go. Throw to them.
Let's get into the questions, and we'll roll through these because we spoke about most of them. I missed this guy last week, so Kyle Forcini asked, why is Odell getting criticized so much? He ended the Norman controversy by burning his bitch ass multiple times and giving him a stiff arm to the neck. Nothing he did on the sideline affected his play. What the hell is the problem here?
Can I answer?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, the issue with Norman and Odell was never about can Norman cover Odell. He can't. We knew that.
Yes.
The issue was about getting into his mind psychologically, yes, and getting off his game. I thought he proved that he played his game, did well. No extracurricular stuff. The sideline stuff is just a buildup of what's been going on with Odell. So you're going to get, and he's also a polarizing figure playing in New York. Given the background, people are going to do stuff like that. And Odell sells papers and he gets website clicks when people talk about him. So that hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go moving on. Michael Miano, will this game end up like every other Vikings-Giants game in the past? A blowout? I just expressed my confidence in the Giants. I think that they can pull it out. If you look at the matchups and you hope that McAdoo changes up his offensive philosophy, I think that they could pull out the win even on the road.
I'm with you. I think this matchup bodes well for the Giants, given stopping them defensively. It's not a high-powered offense.
Yeah. Currently, Giants are 4.5-point underdogs with an over-under of 43 for those degenerates out there. Okay. Moving on. Joe Antonio, will we ever stop running when we should be passing and passing when we should be running? This is something that we spoke about in the podcast last week and the week before. My frustration with running to set up the pass instead of passing to set up the run because you have such a dynamic passing offense. I think it just depends on the matchup, but I'd like to see more of passing to set up the run.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I thought they ran the ball well against the Redskins. I thought they kind of abandoned it late, but a lot of that could have been because of Richburg getting kicked out. Like you said, it's all about matchup schemes and not how many times you run, but when you run. Per se, I think.
Yep. Christian McCarthy, talk about how Darquois should have immediately filled Jennings' role so maybe Vereen doesn't get hurt. I don't necessarily think that one equals the other. I do think that Darquois should have gotten first and second down runs, and Vereen should have just kind of stuck in his role, but I don't think that's why Vereen got hurt. Shit just happens.
No, and I think they split the carries up. I think it was 11 Vereen, 10 Darquois, so I don't...
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
Let's see. Another running back question from Goddamn it, Jake. What role do you see Darquois and Perkins having this week against Minnesota? I know that McAdoo said that he thinks Perkins is ready to step up a little bit. I still don't think we see much of Perkins at all against the Vikings.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think you'll see Rainey a little bit more. And if they use Rainey correctly, he can be a weapon for them.
Yeah, because he can pass block too.
Exactly, and he's a good pass catcher too. I think you'll see a little bit more Darquois. That's going to depend on what happens with Rashad Jennings. But I think you'll see more of Darquois than Perkins.
Yep. The reports that Jennings has not yet been ruled out for Monday, so I guess the Giants are still holding out hope.
Yep.
Zach Jacobs, talk about how the Giants are going to cope with the potential loss of DRC and Eli Apple this week against a tough opponent. We both just kind of talked about how we really, really hope that one of them is healthy. Please. Otherwise, I think the Giants might be in a little bit of trouble.
There'll be a lot of zone, but this opponent is not more of a team that likes to throw the ball a lot, and it's not like a high-powered offense like Green Bay. So I think they won't struggle as badly, but they'll be okay. Let's just hope that one of them can go.
Yeah,
I'm hoping for that.
Okay, last question, and this is a good one.
Chris, I love this question. But go ahead.
Yeah, all right, Chris Whelan. What ways do you guys cope with losses like last week?
You go first. This is a great way to close it out because I love this question. Go ahead.
It's interesting because I was at the game. So I didn't really handle it any differently than I did previous losses. I kind of just get really sad. I put my head down. I mope. And then I immediately open Twitter to give my incredibly negative thoughts and overreactions most of the time. That's usually my coping method.
The way I cope with it is a little bit different than you.
I feel like, can I guess? I want to guess.
Go ahead.
I think you immediately go and you just watch a lot of tape.
I watch something, but I don't watch tape.
Okay.
Unless I want to look at certain plays. I like watching the coach's film, but that doesn't come out till Wednesday. But I do watch certain plays over again. I'll tell you, I watched the Victor Cruz touchdown, his first touchdown against Dallas. I think I watched that like 40 times.
All right.
Just, that was a very special moment for me. But anyways, I cope with losses and wins sort of the same. Every year before football season starts, I restart my favorite show ever, The Office.
Yes, I'm on my third time rewatching The Office. I'm on like season 8 right now, and it's going downhill because there's no more Michael. But that's what I'm doing right now.
Listen, that's what I do.
First of all, something we have in common.
I have other ventures outside of watching Giants and live tweeting Giants that I take care of on Sundays. So after I do that, after Sunday night football, late night, win or loss, I lay in my bed, grab my iPad, get on Netflix, and I watch The Office. Sometimes I watch one episode, 3 episodes, 4 episodes, 5 episodes, and it helps me kind of release some of the sorrow and the upsetness, and then I move on. Losing to the Redskins is very tough for me, guys. I have a lot of family who's Redskins fans, and they...
So did you watch like a full season?
Actually, I was really, really tired on Sunday. So I didn't watch a lot of episodes. I think I watched one. I watched the episode of Office Safety.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Where Michael threatens to jump off the the roof. I watched that one. So that's what I do. But win or lose, I like to watch The Office at night. And I usually finish the series. This is my second time doing it. So I usually, because the first time I did it was during football season. It was actually when I first started watching the show.
Okay.
So this year, I watch it second time rewatching it. But I'll tell you, I'll let you in a secret. Remember the Odell Beckham catch game?
Yes.
Remember that game? That night I was so upset that we lost that I watched, I think, 8 episodes.
Oh my God. All right. Yeah. Well, that's something that we have in common. Then. Huge Office fans. So,
yeah, I love
all right,
that
let's
show,
do
man.
This. If you're listening and you're a huge Office fan, tweet us your favorite Office scene of all time. And if you can, also attach the YouTube clip so that way when I'm at work, I can open it and have a good chuckle. How about that?
Yes, and let's hope that we can walk out of Minnesota with a win. I don't remember the last time the Giants won a game beat a playoff team on the road of this caliber.
Yeah, especially after this past week where you kind of see like, maybe the Giants of last year are back. A win here would be huge.
Yeah, and that question, I looked it up a little bit. They played Philly back in 2013. They beat them 15-9. Remember that game?
Yes.
And it was Matt Barkley starting at quarterback. I don't count that, so I'm really, really thinking as far back as I can. When did the last time they beat a really good playoff team? And haven't really come across it.
The thing is, they were so close last year. They almost beat the Patriots. They almost beat the Panthers.
Yeah, here you go. I got the answer for you.
Okay, who
2012, they beat the team that went to the Super Bowl, San Francisco, in San Francisco, 26-3. Okay. Remember that game?
Yeah.
That was that game. So, hey, there's sort of similarities between that San Francisco team and this Minnesota team.
Yeah.
In terms of the strong defenses, on the road.
Quarterback's a question mark.
Quarterback is sort of a question mark.
Yeah.
Let's hope. They got to get out of this. I refuse to think this is going to be like of years past.
Yeah, me too. That would suck. All right.
That was a fun hour.
Literally an hour. We had 3, 2, 1, 60 minutes. That was crazy. Is this our longest episode?
Yeah, but there's a lot to cover, man.
There's so much.
Yeah, from the Beckham thing, from a lot of what happened during the game. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let me do the plugs. Follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. Follow Wise at NYG Daily. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please subscribe. We'll both be tweeting out the link.
Yes, we will.
And I think that's it. Guys, thanks for listening. Tweet us if we told you to tweet us. Tweet us all your thoughts. And that's about it. Go Giants. And we'll speak to you guys next week.